My lady, I swear to you, I will see the Lannisters answer for your husband's murder. When I take King's Landing, I'll bring you Joffrey's head.
SpecFicMedia.com presents Beyond the Wall, a Game of Thrones podcast with hosts E.G. Holyfield, Christiana Ellis, Chooch, Viv, and Nuchus.
Welcome to SpecFic Media's Beyond the Wall, a Game of Thrones podcast. Oh, okay, I can't do that.
No, that was pretty
scat?
Good.
Did you say scat?
I was saying podcast.
Oh, I thought you said scat.
Hey, this is Chooch Schubert sitting in for P.G. Holyfield, who is taking his turn at protecting us from the Grumpkins and Snarks. And so we are happy, as always, though, to be joined by Viv.
Hi.
Christiana.
Hello.
And Nettie.
Hello.
And we're here to talk about episode 3, What Is Dead May Never Die.
Yay!
You're even more outnumbered with estrogen this week.
This is true. This is true. And we have Kaylee podcasting with us, so...
She is right next to me. We are actually 2 for estrogen. And then Luna...
Yeah, Luna is at my feet at the moment.
Exactly. Yeah. We've got our head by our side. How about you, Nettie? Any females around?
No, actually, just Rory. So it's actually balancing out slightly. A little more in the testosterone favor.
5 estrogen bearers and 2 testosterone bearers. Although, arguably, we all, not even arguably, we all carry both. But anyways, can we start?
And I'm
topic.
I'm fine with this ratio. So, first impressions. My first impression was meh.
Really?
Yeah, I thought it was good. They're all good, but... At least so far this season, this was my least favorite. And I don't know. I really liked some of the lines and a couple of the scenes, but overall, no, I don't know. Didn't do it for me.
My little review of the show will be purely in a response to Chooch, and that is that I think that this is where not having read the book makes a big difference for Chooch, for it not being as significant an episode as it was for me, having read the book a couple of times, book 2 a couple mm-hmm. of times. So that's all I have to say about it. I thought it was a great episode, but I just wanted to make that caveat.
Well, yeah, I think it is interesting to consider it in that light, because I think it was actually my favorite episode of the season so far. And one of the things that I really took away from it, though, is how much I love having the story be adapted into a TV show, just because, well, and also the way they're doing it, because so many of the extra scenes that we're getting that are not from the books, because they're able to show us scenes that we couldn't have in the book because there was no POV characters in them.
Yeah.
And it's giving so much more life to some of the characters that were much more minor in the books.
I agree.
Like Maester Luwin, Yoren, Margaery Tyrell. I mean, there's so much more to them. And even Theon. Holy
cow. Yeah,
I know. Theon is so much more sympathetic in the TV show than in the book.
He is.
And that's bizarre, because in the book he actually gets POV chapters where it's like... maybe it's having some degree of separation from Theon's actual thoughts helps us to sympathize with him.
Hmm. How about you, Nettie?
I loved it. It was yet again another episode where, when the credits rolled around, I said, "Wait, what do you mean? That's it? It's only been an hour?" But I do think that. Hearing Chooch's reaction to it, I don't know why I didn't think of this before, but it really kind of smacks me in the face and says, yeah, this episode was a lot of reward for the readers.
Yeah.
because there was a lot of stuff that we may have wanted to see and a lot of stuff from the books that we really enjoyed that we were able to see right here in this episode. And that was just really great.
Yeah.
So, and, sorry, and, Chooch. And lots That's of okay. cheering, but
sucks to be but you.
As Chooch says, I mean, it totally makes sense to me that if you hadn't read the books, well, you wouldn't be all crazy over this stuff.
Yeah. So. And I was so excited. I mean, I know we're going to go through the call in order, the show in order, but when I knew that they were about to show Brienne, I kind of lost my shit. And I was like, oh, Brienne! And so I've got Chooch on one side of me and Jen Rossi on the other side of me, and they were the only two I was watching it with. Neither of them have read the books. And I'm like, nobody understands this moment but me. It was, yeah.
Your Grace, I ask the honor of a place in your Kingsguard.
Brienne is by far one of my favorite characters.
She's a heartbreaker.
Mm-hmm. She is... I think she is the one that in the podcast of Ice and Fire episode that I was a guest on that I said I identify with most.
Huh.
Because, well, I'm not nearly as tough and awesome with a sword as she is. most of her internal feelings I definitely can relate to, and the other things going on in her life that I'm not going to get into because we just met her.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like her because she's tall.
Yes. Oh my gosh, she was enormous. She Catelyn came up to like her chest.
She's crazy tall. I can't help but think that, I mean, you know, the actress is actually very tall. I think I read that she's 6'3". But but even still, I think in that shot they played it up a little bit. They had her standing on something
higher than
Catelyn, cuz you know, the actress who's playing Catelyn is not that short.
Yeah.
So I mean, she is very, very tall, but I think they actually exaggerated it a little bit with that shot.
Yeah, I absolutely believe you.
That
agree.
Makes sense. And as Bip said, you know, she did lose her shit and apologized afterwards. And I said, you know, well, the moment she took the helmet off, I knew this was going to be significant. So it wasn't, you know, any kind of real spoiler, you know.
Yeah.
Because we've never seen a woman in combat.
Yeah. Not like that.
Not like that. Yeah.
Yeah, like Arya and the boy from the kitchen, that sort of stuff. But not
right,
like.
But not as a knight.
Yeah. And with armor and everything. Yeah.
Badass. Ooh,
defeating God. Sir Loras.
Well, wait.
We
how
should
do you
probably
know she's
go
a
in
knight?
Order, right?
Well.
How do you know she's a knight?
Because she wears armor.
That's how you tell.
But so we should back up. So we had the opening, and I don't believe I caught anything new.
No.
In the opening.
Go ahead.
Sorry. I was just going to say real fast, PG did not give any first impressions in his synopsis, so we're skipping him. But go ahead.
The
opening. During the opening, this watching, Tech just said to me how much he misses last season's opening, that it was much more dramatic and it had a lot more swells, and the more that we listen to the new opening, while it's nice, it's not as nice as season one.
Is it a little bit longer? Is that maybe why they had to...
I don't know. Possibly. It has to be longer because they had to add in more cities, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. I rely on you guys for that part. I'm just sitting there happily humming along and doing my little, I'm so excited, it's about to start. I don't even pay attention to what's going on, I'll be honest. Mm. So whatever you guys think.
So in this episode... But, oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say this opening... up north of the wall was really the only part that I was a little bit annoyed with, just because I felt that the cliffhanger from last time was something that didn't happen in the book, and so I was kind of hoping there was going to be a bigger payoff to it.
Yes,
but it seemed like all they really wanted to do was to show us what Craster's doing rather than have Jon hear about it later.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Well, so I think they wanted to make it more powerful.
Yeah.
And that definitely did more than relaying it with words.
And I guess so. I wanted it to be an even bigger deal than.
Yeah.
You know, Craster comes and goes out, and then there's like, well, we were going to leave anyway. We didn't want to stay at your stupid place anyway. And
so then, and kicks the dirt mound as he walks away.
Yeah.
Well, and I find it interesting that so so, you know, this does open and Crashers Keep exactly where the last episode left off. We have them burst in and Mormont, you know, telling everybody to get out or telling John to get out. And so, but we don't see what conversation they have. So, you know, he says, you have to, what did he say? Something like, you know, you have to make up for this or... Mm-hmm. We have no clue what happens between them, but then he comes out and says, what did you do? Which makes you think either, you know, Craster didn't tell him anything or he just wants to, you know, hear John's
Exactly, because I think he certainly would not expect Craster to tell the whole truth.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah.
Whatever it was you saw, I dare say you'll see it again.
Yep.
So we have PG's notes. I think Mormont's great in this. Yes, I knew about it, and I didn't tell you because you just don't understand the ways of the world.
You know, wildlings serve crueler gods than you or I.
In the books, he actually says that if Craster would just give the boys to them, they'd raise them in the Night's Watch. And but it's more important to Craster. It's not about killing them. It's about serving his gods,
mm-hmm.
which I think is very interesting.
Well, right. I assume that's how he's still able to live out there.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Unprotected.
Yep.
Yep.
Then we
see Sam and Gilly.
Sam and Gilly, yep.
Aww, Sam's I know. So cute.
How can you not love Sam?
The makeup people are certainly emphasizing his puppy dog eyes this season.
They really are. That's exactly what it is.
Yeah, he's adorable.
And some nasty ass teeth.
Well,
yeah.
That's okay. Well,
smile with your mouth closed.
Think of medieval times in England.
What was that, babe?
Think of medieval times in England.
Oh, yeah.
How did teeth look?
So he gives a thimble. I'm not giving it away. I'm giving it to you.
My God.
I like that distinction.
That was so adorable. And I like that it kind of ties in. It ties in kind of with Peter Pan, too, the whole thimble acorn thing.
Oh, yeah.
In the book, Peter Pan.
Mm-hmm.
Not the Disney thing, because Disney skipped it. But anyways.
A kiss.
Yes, it was very, I thought it was, my notes on the Sam and Gilly scene was boner jams. That was all I had. I was like, that's so, like, sweet, and you really want them to kind of, you know.
And I love who, I know I said this last time, but I just love who they cast for Gilly.
Yeah.
There's something about her that is so beautiful and innocent and awesome without being, you know, Sansa Stark.
Right.
Yeah.
And of course, he says, keep it safe for me until I get back. PG's notes, of course, I know what it means in relation to the books, but still you can't feel safe when someone says, until I get back.
Yep. Yes, I'll tell you all about the mystery next time I see you.
But he didn't say it to John, so I think John's really the cursed one in that regard. But.
Oh, yeah.
I know. He's super, too.
Mm-hmm.
It's John's
fault. Well, but it's still it's the horror movie trope, you know? You never say, I'll be right back.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
Then we shoot down south to Winterfell with Bran having another dream.
Mm-hmm. And when he said, and when he's loping around as Summer and you see Hodor and he says Hodor and then that's Hodor. I was like on the floor laughing because of our contest.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. I was glad it happened because it's like, oh, good. Some Hodors.
Hodor. Rouse Bran, will you? It's time for his lessons.
Yeah. As we sat down, I told Tech about the contest, and so he was laughing right there with me.
Did the same thing with Jen Rossi. We were like, oh God, please let him. We guessed that it would be Hodor this week. Please, please, please.
But this whole sequence is like I was saying in the sense that the show allows us to get so much more from some of the characters that are relatively minor in the books, like Maester Luwin. I feel like reading the books, I really didn't have a whole lot of sense of him as a character. I mean, he was there, but I didn't feel like I knew him. Mm. But now I feel like, okay, this guy means something to the characters, you know, and he is someone. He's not just another guy who's there at Winterfell.
Mm-hmm. From
he's the grandfather.
Yeah. From the camera angle, I knew immediately, you know, this is another wolf dream. But the moment you see Hodor, I thought, you know, maybe he recognizes Bran in there. I didn't take it as he's just saying hi to a wolf. Though I suppose, you know, he's a simple guy, so
he certainly does he smiles. He reacts like, "Oh, I'm pleased to see you." That sort of reaction, you know, compared to some of the other, like even Maester Luwin kind of gives Summer a wide berth, and then the serving girls like totally changes her route through the room.
Yeah.
Like, okay, I'm going to go the other way right now. Thanks.
I like
nice
that.
Nice pickup, Chooch. Yeah. I knew that it was Bran inside there when I heard the panting, that it was Summer when I heard the panting.
Mm. I liked how we got a really dramatic show of how different the colors look from, you know, Summer when we're seeing through Summer's eyes. Mm-hmm. Because as soon as Bran opens his eyes in the bed and sees Summer looking down at him, all of a sudden the room's just like saturated with color compared to what it was before.
And Summer's beautiful.
Yeah.
I do equate the Bran doing a gasping waking up with Cersei ripping paper. I don't know. It seems kind of played out, but
yeah.
Although I felt the same way about the show Medium, because that was like 3 times an episode.
Oh, honey, but you watched it every time I watched it. You say that.
I know. It got on my nerves.
Can we just move on? Years. So, let's skip it.
And
let's
saw
go to Marjorie's boobs.
Bran, thank you. Saw Bran had a little peach fuzz on his upper lip.
Yeah.
Y'all noticed that. All 3 of us sat in our house.
Chocolate milk mustache.
And
are you old enough for that?
Yes. The actor probably is. I'm sorry, but it happens very quickly.
We for emails later on, I believe the only email we received was from Pat Mance, and he kind of went beat by beat, so I'm going to throw in some of his observations as we go through here.
Okay.
And he had said that from what Nutty had just said, Pat Mance said it's a shame that they're not allowed to have that they're celibate, because he would make an awesome grandfather. It's being a Luwin.
Oh, the maester? Yeah.
Yeah. And PG said it's a shame that Luwin doesn't believe Bran or believe in magic.
Yeah, although it's what it reminds me of is from season one when Tyrion is going up to the wall with Jon, and it tells us a lot about the world building to have these characters who seem both smart and educated, and yet who completely dismiss the magic as, you know, maybe magic was once a mighty force, but now it's gone. Since the show is kind of telling us through the presence of the White Walkers and the dragons that, and Melisandre now, that maybe magic's on its way back. But it tells us a lot about the world to have these characters that are smart and we trust them, who are saying they're pretty sure that the magic's not real anymore. And so I think that, you know, when we have Maester Luwin telling Bran, it's like, I know how you feel. When I was young, I wanted magic to work too, but it just doesn't. But then he kind of throws in that line. It was interesting too, though, just the phrasing, because what he said is, you know, the dragons are, I think he said the dragons are gone, the giants are dead, and the children of the forest are forgotten.
Right. Mm. Channelizing.
Mm. And I feel like Maester Luwin's sad that it's all gone. Like, he wishes it was. And he's trying to save Bran some hurt. Mm. But I feel like he wishes it was, but it's kind of like talking about dinosaurs.
Yeah. Well, and
Grumpkins.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what I got from him too, is saying, it's like, Luwin's saying to Bran, is, I understand how you feel. I wish it was around too.
Yeah.
But I really think it's not. And so I'm just hoping that you're not going to spend too much of your
And I think it may be telling that only 1 in 100 Meisters actually bother getting through that entire
even line of
training.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
One thing that I took from this scene was the relief from Bran explaining the conversation between Bran and the Master about the links on the chains. And it's because of a conversation we had with our friends Keith and Jen, who are watching it. They had no clue about the Master's chains and all of the links having different significance based on the metal. And even after they explained it, we stopped it and explained it in more depth to Jen, because she was like, wait, what was that? You know, it was, I'm glad that they covered it. Mm-hmm. Maybe they could have thrown in an extra sentence or two, but I was glad that they gave that, because, you know, as we were explaining it for people that haven't read the book, any of the books, the Master's chains are that, and the longer and heavier they are, the more learned and revered they are. Mm-hmm. The smaller the chain, you know, the lighter the weight, but the less respect you garner. And also, in my mind, the less, what is it, the weight of the knowledge upon you is by the links in your chain or something like that. And it's similar to the best way we came up to describe it was to liken it to Khal Drogo's long braid that had never been cut because he'd never lost a battle. It was a weight and it was a pain in the butt, but it was like a king's crown. It was their glory, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And so I was really glad that they touched on that. And because that seems to be something that non-readers have not quite gotten the hang of yet.
Yeah, it's such a neat piece of world building that they just really haven't covered in the show before.
Exactly.
And we shoot over to the Stormlands and with Renly, the arena, and we meet a new character.
Brienne! Well, we get a couple because we meet Marjorie Tyrell is new, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we got a couple characters right there on her chest, too.
You know, it's hard for me to even, like, to me, she's always, you know, Queen Anne or Prince, you know, from the Tudors.
I never watched the Tudors, so.
Me neither. So back. She's
I wish
fresh
I had,
for me.
Because I didn't like her in it. So yeah. I wish that I had, like, a fresh perspective on her with Marjorie, But yes, she's there. She's married to Renly, and then we meet Brienne.
Mm-hmm.
Yay, Brienne!
Brienne is,
everybody loves Brienne.
Although I think, you know, anyone who hadn't read the books could be forgiven by maybe not being super impressed by her so far, just because, you know, I mean, obviously her arc is just starting. But she's kind of cool and interesting just by virtue of being, you know, crazy tall and a good warrior, but also a lady and clearly devoted to Renly. But also, I mean, she's kind of mean.
She's like a grown-up Arya, I think.
Yes.
Well, see, I feel like she's like, I don't know. She's maybe it's just, you know, through having grown up and, you know, had to suffer through all of the things she's had to suffer through. But she's just got a huge chip on her shoulder, even compared to Arya, right. I think.
Yeah.
Agreed. So, Chooch, what are your thoughts on Brienne?
Like I said, I knew this was definitely going to be significant.
Well, why don't you say that over? Because I think you said that. Did you say that when we were recording or before we were recording?
Yeah, I said it when we were recording.
I'm sorry. I apologize then. Beep, beep, beep.
And so, yeah, I'm looking forward to see, you know, kind of her story and how it plays out. See that she's clearly fully behind Renly, and I don't know why, at least not yet. So I want to see that play out.
Okay.
PG had his notes. It didn't sound like Brienne's voice that said yield. Nice to see Renly putting her on his King's Guard.
It wasn't. It wasn't.
Yeah.
Sorry. It wasn't Brienne's voice. It was Loras saying yield. I yield.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah.
That's how that would be.
I wrote, Loras doesn't seem happy to hear they'll be taking King's Landing. Too much the brat. They could have uglied up Brienne a bit more, but she's spot on as an actress.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I loved her. I immediately believed her as Brienne.
Yeah.
No hesitation.
If you've seen her publicity photos, you'll know that they uglied her up a lot. Because the actress is drop-dead gorgeous.
Well, yeah. She owned that role.
And that was similarly, it was echoed by Patman. I thought it was a good introduction of Brienne and Margaery Tyrell. Brienne isn't really as ugly as described in the books. She's TV ugly, in quotes, I guess, but I have no complaints. I really think Gwendolyn Christie really captured the Brienne's persona, and she looked a giantess. And a note. I think I've mentioned before that my wife was disappointed with season one's Renly. When reading the books, she really had this heroic image of him. I can't speak for my wife, but I liked Renly's public appearance as king in this episode, particularly when he was talking to the old man with the horse. It gave the impression of how Renly was in the books, that he was a gifted people person and could inspire loyalty, unlike Stannis.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. That's what I think that we haven't seen with Renly yet. You know, that whole scene from last season where Loras was like, but everybody loves you. You're awesome. You're the bomb diggity. But we hadn't seen any of it. Mm-hmm. And I think you're right, Chooch. Or I guess Pat. Oh, that was the...
Yeah, that was Pat.
That was the piece of email that came in from our frequent commenter, Patman. I don't know if you prefaced that.
I did. Okay. I mean, I'm not going to every time I read it. I just say, here's Pat again, but I'm interspersing his email throughout because he put it beat by beat or scene by scene.
Yeah. Oh, cool. Well, I think he's absolutely right. That was a good scene for them to bring that message home.
Then we have Renly and Catelyn's talk. My son is fighting a war, not playing at one.
If Robb Stark wants a pact with us, he should come himself, not hide behind his mother's skirts.
My son is fighting a war, not playing at one.
It's like, oh, snap.
Well, that's the key other aspect of Renly that is so important, I think, is that, yes, on the one hand, you know, he's got these people cheering for him, but it's like, as Catelyn points out, it's like, yeah, you got these 100,000 men, they're all cheering for you, that's great. Have they ever fought in a war before?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, Robb may be young, but he's battle-tested. Whereas Renly was a boy during Robert's Rebellion and Balon's Uprising. So he's never actually fought in any battles, nor has Loras. Loras has only done tourneys. Mm-hmm. So that is a huge, huge distinction. And I thought that they brought that out really well in the show.
Then he got whooped by a girl.
Yes. And it really bothered him. Yeah. Couple of things I did write down in my notes, by the way. She's huge in all caps, which was awesome. In the books, she has this amazingly blue armor that's supposed to signify the fact that she comes from the Island of Sapphires and there's blue everywhere. And her underpadding was blue. But honestly, a lot of the heraldry and the decoration from the books is just not really going to show well in the series, so I understand that. But yeah, I do miss the rainbow cloaks.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, I think the rainbow cloaks, given that they're making it really obvious that Renly is gay, the rainbow cloaks would probably be misinterpreted.
That was always my response to people who would tell me, what are you talking about? Renly and Loras aren't a couple. They're not gay. And I'm like,
yeah,
hello?
They really, really
rainbow
are.
Rainbow cloaks on his
kid. No, I mean, I'll confess I didn't get it until it was pointed out to me. But then once it was, I was like, oh.
Well, as you guys know, we didn't see it until last season when they showed him making out. So I was really pick up on that one.
That's okay. I didn't get the whole Stannis-Melisandre relationship until people like hit me over the head with it. I was like, wait, really?
even that, though, I think it I'm not sure that was ever explicit in the books. It was only characters speculating about it.
Yes. Well, much like Renly and Loras, it was never explicit. It was just speculation. So.
Yeah, that's true, I suppose. But you know, as important, obviously, as the introduction of Brienne is, I think having Margaery Tyrell so early in this season is great, too, because, again, she is another character that, at least in book two, was not really much of a factor at all.
Right.
But we get a much better sense of who she is in the show, and I think that's great.
Yes.
I love
Yeah, and also we get personality from her right away, just like the way she is unlike every other woman we've seen watch Attorney in the show so far, she's like actually interested.
Mm-hmm. And obviously
she's cheering on her brother, but even still, she's not just like, yawn, another melee combat. It's more like, no, this is awesome. Come on, go, Loras, you know?
Right.
Yeah. She's
engaged. I'm looking forward to her.
I love that they introduced two strong women in this episode, because Sansa is looking so frail. I know we're going to talk about her later, but it's like she's still got the spark, but you know, it's harder to see that kind of boldness that she had earlier this season. So it's really cool. I mean, yeah, Marjorie lays it out there.
Yeah. On Tor.com, the person who did a review of the episode there said that her friend described Natalie Dormer, the actress who plays Marjorie, as plotty McPlotface.
Yes, exactly.
And I thought that was kind of funny.
Which, again, is how it was with the Tudors, too. So it's kind of hard for me to disassociate.
Mm-hmm.
So what's our next scene? Is that Theon and Baelor?
To Pike.
Yay. Yeah.
And again,
Tech wants me to mention that Asha's one of the hottest women in the book, and he loves Yara.
Right on.
I like Yara, but why doesn't she move her arms when she walks? No, I mean, seriously, she walks around like she left the coat hanger in her vest.
She walks around like you ever go to the gym and you see the guys who have so much muscle they can't put their arms down?
Yeah.
That's how she walks around.
That's what I was just thinking.
So I like the portrayal so far, except that just weirds me out. Every time I see her, it's like, why is she walking like that?
I think it's meant to be more masculine.
I guess, but it's...
I know. It's awkward.
It doesn't read that way. It just reads as weird to me.
Right on.
Just awkward.
Otherwise, I like her. But again, this is another example of a scene that it played out a little differently than in the books, but it humanizes Theon even more than his own POV chapters in the books did.
Agreed. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't feel this sense of Theon's confliction in the books until maybe book six, not six. Are we at six?
Five.
Whatever.
Five is
dance. Three. Yeah, five. Until book five. So I thought that this was such a great scene. And you can see both their sides. You can see Theon's side and you can see Balon's side. Because honestly, Theon is not somebody to be trusted, according to Balon, because he has been with the Starks for half his life. And at the same time, Theon, you know, has every right to feel betrayed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because he was abandoned and, you know, Ned Stark never treated him like a son. He was always treated like a hostage. I mean, even in last season, we had Maester Luwin reminding him that he was a prisoner.
But Rob did.
Yes, mm-hmm. Rob
remember,
did.
You know, the last season, you know, the whole King in the North scene, Theon, before he pledged to him, he said, you know, am I your brother now and always? And Rob said, yes, now and always. And that's when Theon said, I pledge my sword to you, the King in the North.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so now he's basically saying, well, and so I guess we sense that conflict in him. Yeah. And I think that's great. And so and the thing is, too, is like, you know, I think Asha/Yara is still awesome, but Balon's kind of a jerk.
Yeah.
And he's sort of like, you know, it's a sad thing that Theon feels that he would rather get Balon's approval than to continue to help Rob. And we understand why he might make that decision, but I think it's still a sad thing. Yes.
Yeah. It was good to see him call his dad out, you know.
Yes.
About not especially bowing down, you know, and you gave me away like a dog you didn't want.
Yeah. That was painful.
And it
to
clearly
watch,
affected him, you know.
Yeah.
He never turned.
The pain in the actor's face was great.
Yeah.
Which may be, you know, clearly a lot of why he is acting the way he is kind of his own guilt on top of feeling, you know, he's a traitor.
Well, I mean, it's easier to reconcile that with yourself if you say, oh, well, he's weak anyways. She's stronger anyways. It's better for me to have her be the one that I leave everything to anyways. It's just an easy cop-out for him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because, I mean, you know, he hits Theon in the mouth, but he really has no answer. Mm-hmm. You know, Theon's basically pointing out, oh, you're making this big deal about bowing to no one except for the time that you bowed to the Starks and gave me away.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But like, Balon didn't have a choice. Well, like, essentially, he was defeated.
Yeah, but
his choice was his whole family could die,
right,
or
well, no.
he could give up his son.
I have no problem with that logic, except for exactly what Theon say. You sent me away, and now you're punishing me. You know?
Oh, yeah, like, absolutely.
It's not his fault. He was as Yara says, you were a fat little boy the last time I saw you. Well, now he's a man, and he's been treated as less than at the Starks, and now he returns home, what he's probably been looking forward to his whole life, as you know, since he's been traded off, and he gets there and he's treated worse than he was treated at the Starks.
But so at the same time, Balin sees him as a traitor in his midst. You know, how can he trust his son?
Absolutely. It's a clusterfuck.
That's why it's such a great scene.
Mm-hmm.
Did we skip the scene with Renly and Marjorie and Loras in
that's
the tents?
Later.
Okay, I was going to say.
Yeah.
All right, never mind.
That's so, coming up. Sorry. Next, we head to King's Landing with Shay and Tyrion. Which I didn't really have any comments on, other than she knew what she was getting into when she came with him.
Yeah. Yes and no. I mean, I think that she figured, and at least the books led into it, was that she didn't realize exactly what life was going to be like there for her. He wanted her there so bad, and you guys can correct me. But my favorite line of that whole scene is her saying, how is being a weakness a compliment?
Mm-hmm. Oh, see, my favorite
my
is
weakness. You're my weak spot.
Yeah, my favorite line is, every man who's tasted my cooking has told me what a good whore I am.
Yeah. That was pretty good. You know, I have to say though, and I felt this way in the books too, so it's not really a change. But I don't like Shay, and I don't mean that I don't like her as a character. I think she's interesting, and I can see why Tyrion might feel about her the way he does, but I just feel like, personally, I have no affection for her character. I don't like her. Well, I feel like I don't trust her. I feel like it's not even that. It's more just like a matter of, like, she doesn't seem like she's can be relied upon for anything.
Yeah, yeah.
She, you know, so it's like, even when it's for her own safety that she needs to pretend to be a servant, she does it in just like the poutiest, huffiest way. And it's kind of like, you're making it so difficult to keep you from being killed.
Yeah. I also love the whole, I'm not a kitchen wench. Like, yeah. I would never be so low as to be a kitchen wench. And I'm like, wait, but you're a whore. That just goes to show what an elevated status whores have
in
this book. Well, in these books, I mean, there is, being a whore is probably a step up from a lot of jobs and a lot of positions for women.
Yeah.
And it's a bit of that, but she also has this sense of entitlement. Like, honestly, she doesn't want to work for anything. She just wants Tyrion to give her everything.
She thinks she's Inara.
Yeah, she thinks she's Inara, and she's not.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what I've taken that seemed to me, not having read, you know, any of the other books, that there's a lot more to her background, and that, you know, her sense of entitlement may have been earned somewhere else in her past.
It is true that when they played the guessing secrets game, Tyrion guessed a lowborn girl, and she made him drink. But did she make him drink because it was really not true, or just because she's cheating?
Yeah.
Yep.
Ooh, suspicious.
Also, I don't think, because this Shay is not like the Shay in the books, are we really going to be able to find out what we'd like to, because it's a completely different character, in my opinion. And this is not the Shay from the books. There are similarities, but it's just not Shay.
I don't know. I keep hearing people say that, but I don't know. I guess I find that I feel about her about the same that I did in the books.
I'm the same with as Christiana. I didn't ever really, especially up to this point, I really didn't have any kind of emotional investment in her. I saw her as more of a way for Tyrion to heal his heart from, you know, what happened to the woman that he loved before. And this is a way to kind of give his dad the finger at the same time.
Yeah. I like that she likes Tyrion. That's about it.
Yeah. Yeah. That she feels that need for him.
In the books, I understood why Tyrion fell for her and why Tyrion was letting himself fall into this whole relationship that he has with her. Whereas in the book, it's much less like that. Like, I don't understand why Tyrion thinks he can trust her. And because in the book, he seems to trust her. And that's the only difference.
Well, again, I think he's transferring his love for his first wife, who I can't remember her name.
Tysha.
He's transferring the love. I'm sorry?
Tysha.
Tysha. I think that he's transferring his love for her onto Shay. I don't think that he really exactly sees Shay.
Right.
I think he
I agree with you 100%.
But yeah,
I thought that the book one was more convincing. That's all. And go ahead.
I guess I don't remember it that well.
Well, and the other thing is, when it's a book, everyone pictures things differently, right?
That's very true.
So we all have our own interpretations, which is not to say that you're right, I'm right, or anything like that. It's just
No, I'm right.
My interpretation. Oh, okay.
Let's be clear. Just kidding.
One other thing I noticed is she's calling him her lion, my lion, whereas in the book she called him my giant of Lannister.
Oh, and that's right.
I really preferred the mighty. I know this is totally nitpicky, and I'm being like the super nerd that everyone's like, what the hell is wrong with you?
But
I just always liked it, the my giant of Lannister, because it's for stupid reason he's a dwarf.
Well, I like looking at her, and I like hearing her talk, but I have no investment in this plot line at all. And she could not be there, you know. As far as I'm concerned,
she's eye candy.
It's my least favorite plot line, I think. It doesn't seem to be going anywhere.
Oh, okay. Cool. Interesting. Well, it's not like very he can marry her. Perspective, huh?
It's not like he can marry her.
Yeah. I also liked his line after she says, how is being weakness a compliment? And he says, language. Was it language or words? Or a bit
language is tricky.
Yeah.
It's a bit tricky.
I do like that she calls him on that sort of thing. He's so used to being able to talk his way out of stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, she just points out, it's like, so now I'm the foreign girl and I'm just who's too stupid to understand what you're trying to say.
She's like one of those self-rescuing princesses you hear so much about.
Well, except that she's also the one who gets herself into danger, too.
Oh, come on. Peach had it coming. So did Zelda. Snow White. Whatever.
Shay is the definition of high maintenance.
Yep.
Yes. Yes.
Speaking of princesses, we move over to Cersei and Sansa and the kids eating.
And Marcella and Tommen get lines.
I know. Wasn't Tommen adorable?
You know the only reason they're allowed to speak is because Joffrey's not there.
Yeah.
Shit. And they're both at all this episode, did we?
No,
Joffrey, thank God. Yay. No, this was a really, I think, again, Sansa really brought it. Just seeing her and the ravages of what is going on inside of her head and her heart. It's just painful to look at. It is just excruciating. She has really, I think, really brought it this season, so far at least. And I, you know, Marcella and Tommen being so young, they didn't realize that they were literally crushing her soul. And, you know, they're just, but then Tommen at the end going, no, I don't think I'd like that. You know, it was just like, aw, Tommen.
I love him.
Did they even say his name in that scene?
I don't know.
They mentioned Princess Marcella a few times, but I don't think they named Tommen. Yeah. I wonder if they've changed his name too.
No, they've said it before. I don't know that they said it in this scene, but they have before.
And PG's,
I think we see... Go ahead.
In PG's comments, Tommen likes the Starks. In the books, he got along well when visiting Winterfell, and Sansa plays her part.
Mm-hmm. Did you guys catch the whole, the tiny little hint of Sansa's rebellion? Just it's the tiniest little hint, but that's all she can manage. But just the whole, you know, Cersei is saying, you know, the princess spoke to you, and she says, you know, I can't remember exactly, but she's essentially saying, I can't wait for the day that I can give my thanks to the king.
I'm counting the days until the fighting's done, and I can pledge my love to the king in sight of the gods.
Yeah. She never uses names. She can't wait until the fighting's over, and she can pledge herself to the king.
Yeah, and then so you watch Cersei's face in that, and there's just this tiny hint of, you little bitch.
That was totally lost on me.
Well, it's pretty subtle. I only saw that the second time through.
Oh, brilliant.
Yeah. And so it's very subtle because obviously both of them are trying to keep any of that from the kids, right?
Yeah.
And so, but you can see from Sansa that she's strained. She is not going to be able to keep this up for much longer unless she gets some sort of an outlet. So maybe she'll get some sort of an outlet. I don't know.
I was also thinking that we do see some strength from Sansa here, and this is her enduring strength. Her mode of survival is to just do what they say and do what they expect without stepping out of line too much. Yes, she does not use names, and she says, I can't wait till the fighting's over and to pledge my love for the king. But at the same time, she knows her words. She does them well. And if you notice, Cersei calls her Little Dove.
Little Dove, yes. Mm-hmm.
And the Hound calls her Little Bird, who knows the songs that they've taught her. So I think that's kind of interesting that we're just, you know, continuing with this. Yes, she's learned her part. She must play it. And, you know, just because you don't see an outward strength like Brienne or Arya where you're fighting and kicking butt does not mean the character's not strong.
Oh, no, by no stretch of the imagination. Mm-hmm. Sansa is like the Iron Horn almost.
She's the Timex of characters.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, to put up with everything she's had to go through and not just be a sobbing mess.
Yeah.
Still in King's Landing. Now we're in Sansa's room with Shay.
Mm-hmm.
I already said this storyline's annoying me. PG said, didn't much like the scene with Sansa and Shay. I understand how Sansa's reacting to Shay, but Shay isn't really trying at all. You'd think Tyrion would have explained the situation a little better. Which I think maybe perhaps he did, and Shay just doesn't give a shit.
She did. She's rebelling.
Yeah, that's a child. Yeah, so that's exactly kind of where I'm at, is that I believe that Shay would act that way. That is part of what I don't like about her. And again, it's not even that I'm criticizing the show's portrayal of her or the actress. It's more for me just that I don't find the character likable. Mm-hmm. So not all the characters are likable.
Yeah, there's a lot of characters we hate.
But that said, the whole bit about, you know, Sansa, you know, even beyond just, you know, general frustration, the idea that she's suddenly got a new handmaiden who doesn't even seem to know how to be a handmaiden, more than a little suspicious.
Which I think is why she held back her bitchiness. While she was a little bitchy to Shay, she was a lot bitchier to Septa Mordain.
Yeah.
Well, I thought that she also it seemed that she was fighting the bitchiness a little bit because she really did want to talk to somebody. She didn't necessarily want to be alone and definitely didn't want to be with a Lannister.
True.
That was, I think that's where the scene sort of ends, is that Shay's just finally like, do you want me to leave? And then Sansa's kind of like, oh, well, I guess not. But don't talk.
Just brush my hair. In the books, Shay is not living in the palace. She is living off grounds. Eventually, she does become a handmaiden, but to a different character. And then eventually she becomes Sansa's handmaiden, but I won't go into too much of that.
I accelerated that a little bit. Yeah,
I think it works really well. Rather than going into the whole, she lives somewhere else, she's with this other character. I don't think we're going to meet Lollies at all, unless they've cast her. I haven't heard anything. This streamlines it.
Skipping that,
Yeah, which they've done a few times, just, you know, no sense in introducing another character.
Well, they do that a bunch with Argus storyline, too, which I think, you know, we'll discuss more when we get there. But I think it's a good example of stuff that it's fine in the book. I don't think that it reads too long in the book, but I think they're trimming the story in the right places.
I agree.
Makes sense. Patman had a comment on this. I just wasn't a fan of the Shay Sansa scene. I kept expecting Shay to just stab her.
Sorry, that's really funny. Because I just visualized her doing it, and it was really funny.
I did like Shay taking, you know, dipping her finger in the leftover food as she's about to clear the table.
Still in King's Landing, we have Tyrion's chamber as he develops his little test.
Oh, that was so great. Another perfect
part of the episode.
Another perfect example of something that I think the show did it even better than the books did.
I agree 100%. I had no idea how they were going to show that, and they did it masterfully.
I was going to say, I didn't really remember this part. I have not gone back to reread book two. Chooch and I talked about it and decided against that to give kind of another perspective. So I don't remember it that clearly. I remember that there was a plot, but I thought it was done fantastically well on the show itself.
Mm-hmm. Well, so in the book, first of all, it doesn't have it like a montage like the show does, which makes it a little harder because you have essentially like three completely separate Tyrion chapters where he pitches each of these three.
Yeah, you don't catch on what's happening till much later.
Yeah, and but the other thing is too that the plans that he told each of them were more complex, so it was less obvious that he was telling each of them mutually contradictory things, because there was stuff involved with like, oh, well, I'm going to tell Pycelle that we're sending Myrcella off to Dorne and Tommen to the Eyrie. And then I'm going to tell Littlefinger that we're going to marry Myrcella to Robert Arryn. And then send Tommen somewhere else. And so it was like, It was complicated in a way that made it more confusing. Although that said, the simplified version, although I think it's better in general, I think telling Varys, oh yeah, we're going to wed Myrcella to Theon Greyjoy, that one strained credibility a little bit. And even Varys kind of said so. It's begging your pardon. But
how are you going to sell that?
But, he had sort of an answer for it, but it was not something that he could pitch and make it actually sound like a good idea. But again, I suppose that doesn't necessarily mean that Varys wouldn't believe it. It would just mean that Varys would think Tyrion was making a dumb move.
I think PG may be coming back for the curmudgeon title. In his comments, while I liked the cutting between Pycelle, Varys, and Baelish, I didn't like the scene overall. It felt like they were going for an almost comical feel to it. Too much the queen mustn't know. Though I did like Littlefinger's reaction. What's in it for me? Harrenhal and Lord of the Riverlands.
Yeah.
I also like the, Yano Slynt gets sent to the wall after being given Harrenhal, and he served your family very well. And it's like, I don't need him. I need you.
Yeah,
and
he really brought that home.
You can see how Peter would go, okay, yeah, that makes sense to me.
Yeah. Is that clear enough for you, Peter?
Well, and so it's another good example, though, of how the misstep that Cersei made in threatening Baelish.
Yep.
Earlier in the season that makes him all the less inclined to help her out.
Yeah.
Yep.
Absolutely. We head back over to the Stormlands for Renly and Loras action. Loras throwing a little bit of a hissy fit.
Yeah, you know, I think not that it turns into a big thing, you know, here yet, but I think it's, given that it was something that wasn't really in the books, I think it's interesting that they're setting up a layer of jealousy between Loras and Brienne. I think, you know, I'm not going to spoil anything, but given what happens, I think that makes sense to do. And I think it's interesting.
See, and I thought Loras was essentially reflecting everything that all of the men in Renly's party are thinking. But I like your idea, too, because that definitely, you know, flows with it as well. You know, because we see this woman fighting. This shows us this is not accepted. And even, you know, the gay guy is upset about it. Because, you know, somebody who's already in a role that, you know, normally is not accepted. He's just really not accepted. Okay with this because she's a woman. How dare she, you know? I'm a man, and don't remind me of my bruises and the fact that I lost. And Renly just doesn't get it, and I love it.
Yeah, but I just this whole sequence is it's exactly the sort of scene that we couldn't get in the book, just because none of these characters are POV characters. Yep. And but it adds so much great additional depth to some of the storytelling, which I think is fantastic. Just, you know, first of all, obviously, you know, the idea that everyone is kind of aware what really needs to happen here, but just how pragmatic Margaery was. I thought that was great.
Yeah.
Just kind of saying, listen, you and I both know that this is a political marriage, but that doesn't mean that we don't still have to get the job done here. So what's it going to take?
Do you want my brother to come in and help?
What?
Well, he could get you started. I know he wouldn't mind. Or I can turn over and you can pretend I'm him.
Yeah, let's figure it out. I loved that. I thought that was great.
Well, because especially with the rumors, if Renly has a true-born Baratheon, and the way that it seems now, you know, Stannis doesn't have any kids, that would just make his claim to the throne better than his brother's.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, although what's the point of getting the throne if you can't procreate, right?
Yeah. One of the things I think in the books that, you know, when Catelyn is trying to talk to Renly, one of the things she's trying to say to him is like, don't fight Stannis, because even if Stannis, if you help him become king, he doesn't have anyone who's going to be able to inherit the throne, and it's just going to go to you anyway if you can wait 5 years.
Yeah.
Or however long.
They won't listen. Because they're, you know, too pig-headed, and I want it all for me, and all of that jazz. I do want to say there's a couple of things that we get from this that readers, or at least me as a reader of the book, has been wanting to know. Number one, the exchange of, and Margaery's a virgin? Officially.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
Which is great, because
well, and also, you know,
a topic.
No spoilers, but relevant later.
Yeah. It's as much a topic in the books as the first season, whether or not Sansa has flowered yet is a topic. You know, it's brought up a lot, and it makes you wonder, wait, is she? Isn't she?
Well, you know, you'd kind of think she would have to be, given that, you know, it's like how, you know,
how is she?
Well, let me get you started here. You know, she just unbuckled, you know, it's like she's not hesitating there.
Yeah.
And the other thing that we get is that, yes, Margaery knows about Loras and Renly, and she's more than okay with it. She's willing to bring Loras in. She's
I can turn over and pretend I'm him.
Yeah.
Can I say that if this chapter was in the book, then I am a fool for not having caught it before. How was this covered in the book?
It wasn't at all.
It was just a question for speculators.
Yeah. So
I knew that it was speculated that, you know, Renly and Margaery had not banged yet. But the part with Loras, was there any reference at all to him and her? Because I don't remember that.
No, I mean,
did she say, I'll bring Loras in and get it started? I mean,
there was none of that. So basically, it's, you could look up online what the clues are.
Okay.
And they're still pretty obscure.
Okay.
Because we don't get POVs from any of those characters. It can only be communicated to us by people who don't really know and are speculating.
Okay. Right.
But ultimately what it is it's a bunch of clues that made people go, could this be? And then George R. R. Martin said, yeah.
Okay.
You know, it's just like Christiana said, it's just little clues. And I think a lot of the speculation comes from the fact that Loras and Marjorie are very close, and that Loras was so supportive of Marjorie being, you know, Renly's wife, that you kind of feel like, well, how do they deal with the jealousy unless she's aware of it? Do you think she's okay with it? What's going on here? You know, so it's just... There's a lot of speculation and talk about things that we didn't see simply because we've had to wait for so long for the books.
Well, and then some of it too is just like, you know, how Laura says, you know, some of your bannermen are like sniggering on your back. You know, the bride is not usually still a virgin 2 weeks after the marriage. And the thing is, that's the sort of clues that we got before, is people talking like that.
Exactly.
To say, you know, what's the deal with Renly? He's not consummating his marriage, even though she's there with him.
Yeah. Exactly.
PG's comment, Marjorie. Personally, I like it off.
Yes. Boobs coming in, and then she's like, do you like it like this? And then I thought, or what's she going to do to change it? Oh, she's taking it off.
Yeah. Well, you know, when she took off the top, and it kind of cuts to his reaction, I'm just imagining his thought is like, if he was able to speak there, he's like, well, you've certainly got those, don't you?
You've brought those to the table.
And he echoed the other sentiments. Marjorie's a realist, that's for sure. Just put a baby in my belly. You can have Loras if you need him. You're the damn king.
Yeah.
Awesomeness. And I'm so happy that was spelled out for us, by the way.
Yes, I agree. And just getting so much more of a sense of who she is when we really didn't at this point in the books, I think I really like.
For, you know, being brand new, it was, yeah, kind of immediate gratification to see what she's about. I thought it was great. Right? Yeah, the boobs aside, but...
Well, she has nice boobs. Next.
Back to King's Landing, Tyrion and Cersei. You think a piece of paper father gave you will keep you safe? Ned Stark had a piece of paper.
And I tore that piece of paper right up. Yours, too, for that matter.
PG says...
Do you have any more paper?
Yeah. PG says, Cersei losing more control. Love it.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, I think it almost reads better. This is another example of one that almost kind of plays better. I think it feels more right than in the book. Basically, it's the similar, except instead of like throwing stuff off the table and shoving him, she basically just bursts into tears right there at the table. And even in the chapter, Tyrion is just like, but what? Huh? But having her, you know, crying, but like the more angry sort of, you know, she, you know, the rage and sadness, because that's the thing that it's easy to forget about Cersei, is that she's such a bitch so much of the time that we need to remember she is actually capable of love and all of that. It's just, she's just very focused. Yes. She loves her kids. She loves Jaime. That's about it.
Yeah.
Very narrow range right there. But that doesn't mean that she doesn't feel those things.
And
that's, I think, part of Tyrion's reaction in this is sort of remembering that he shouldn't assume the wrong things about her. You know, he should not assume that she's just cold.
Yep. Absolutely.
Yeah. And we have Theon at Pike burning up his letter to Rob.
Really beautiful staging of all of that, I thought.
Yeah.
Yeah, PG has said, you know, Theon with his letter, burns it, makes his choice, family over friend. Great visual of him burning the letter in the darkness.
Mm-hmm.
Just adds more to that Theon depth we were talking about earlier.
Now, the baptism, was that Uncle Aaron, or is that just some random...
I don't know if they've identified him yet.
Yeah.
They certainly didn't call him by name, but,
no.
You know.
And I didn't see it on the closed captioning either.
I feel like they're just dropping that character, so...
I mean, they have to have him eventually, though. I mean, right?
They will.
Yeah, but they might work him in as a different, in a different way.
Yeah.
In the books, the priest is his uncle. And in the books, instead of just being baptized with salt water, he's essentially drowned and his uncle has to perform mouth-to-mouth.
Well, did they do that to Theon, though? That's what Aaron does when he's, you know, baptizing, like, new priests. But did he do that to Theon? I don't think he did.
Well, I remember Theon was choking on the water, at least, in the book. Because they did pour the water down his throat. But I don't know if they fully drowned him.
Yeah, I don't remember. Because I know he did that. He, you know, the whole drowning and then CPR resuscitation thing is something they show him doing, but not to Theon. So I
And
I
that's
don't
what
remember.
That whole what is dead may never die thing refers to. Because in their religion, if you've already drowned, you've died. And so...
they haven't made a big deal about it in the show, but it's kind of cool in the books that their religion is almost like a Cthulhu cult sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's great.
Yeah.
Love it.
We have Patman's email. It was cool seeing Theon's uncle Aaron doing the drowned god sacrament. Now, last podcast, I think I heard Nettie refer to him as the
Damfair.
She pronounced it damn fair. I don't know how the audiobooks pronounce it, but in my mind, Aaron's nickname has always been pronounced damp hair.
That's what I thought, too.
If I heard Nettie wrong, I apologize.
I say damp hair, damn fair, so many different ways, just like I mispronounce Maester and Gendry all the time.
Yeah.
So there's no sense.
I was having a conversation about this. I don't think you can mispronounce them because we didn't have anybody reading these names to us when we started reading these 20 years ago,
and I discount everything that the audiobook does anyway because I'm not a fan.
I mean, it's just pronounce it however you want. We'll figure it out and move on.
And
if we can stick to what the show uses, great. But I don't think it's anything to really fret over.
Yeah, everybody knows what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And PG had said, damp hair sighting.
Exactly.
Has the baptism, but dad doesn't even look his way. There's
Balon is a messed up dude.
Dude, so messed up.
We swoop back to King's Landing with Tyrion and Littlefinger.
I don't appreciate being made a fool of, dwarf. If Myrcella marries the Martell boy, she can't very well marry Robin Arryn, can she?
No. Afraid not. Sorry about that.
And Harrenhal. I suppose that's off the table as well.
Yes, I fear so. Sorry about that, too.
Oh, yeah. I liked this scene, too, just in the sense of, the show, again, even more than the books, is really making it clear that, you know, Lord Baelish does not like to be trifled with.
Mm-hmm.
He's pissed. He recognizes, of course, and one of the things I think is great too is just how different the reactions from him and from Varys are to realizing what Tyrion did. You know, Varys thinks it's funny and he's like, "Well played," but you know, Lord Baelish is pissed.
Yeah, Harrenhal. Well, I suppose that's off the table.
Yeah, and Tyrion does not sound terribly sorry.
Yeah.
He says he's terribly sorry. He doesn't sound terribly sorry.
Then there's a great line. You want to see your beloved cat again.
Yes, yes. But I also think this is more of, it shows us how people treat Tyrion. I mean, he's a Lannister. And people are often saying, by you, or that you could do this to me. The fact that he's a dwarf, it matters to so many people. It really does matter. It's not just, oh, he's a nobleman with a handicap. It's, how dare you do this to me? You know, when Janos, whatever, Slint, said, was so uppity and in his face because Mr. Captain of the City Watch thought he was more important than a Lannister simply because Tyrion's a dwarf. And I think a lot of that also comes from Peter. I mean, if Cersei used him in a deception, I don't think he'd be nearly as mad, even with their strained relationship. But the fact that the imp did this to him, oh, how dare you?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think it was, it's almost not even that is, I mean, although I, there's maybe that too, but I got the impression that it wasn't that he had a problem with so much as this, like, I don't like being the target of the deception.
Yes.
You know, if you want to have me in on your plan as we deceive someone else, I am all for that. I am all about doing that. But you trick me? No, you don't.
Peter doesn't like being the butt of anyone's jokes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then we move
to... Yeah, just like Roz was saying in the first season, is like, don't call him Littlefinger. He doesn't like that.
Yeah.
And then we get the awesome scene with Pycelle.
With Pycelle and my favorite little interchange. Cut off his manhood and feed it to the goats.
Cut off his manhood and feed it to the goats.
No, 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 no. There are no goats, half-man.
We'll make do.
That was a great callback to last season. I was missing Shaga. I'm so happy to see him.
Yeah.
Chooch, what did you think of this scene? What did you think of them cutting off Pycelle's beard and humiliating him?
I thought it was a great scene, and it was a little... I guess the beard didn't occur to me, might be a mark of pride for him. But when he cut it off, and I was like, oh, damn. It seemed significant all of a sudden.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, because they did not... When Catelyn was traveling with Roderick, Sir Roderick, right. And he's the guy with the crazy beard at Winterfell... It was a really big deal at some point in the story where he shaves off his beard and she'd never seen him barefaced before. So it was like a really big deal. So yeah, I guess that wouldn't have seemed like a big deal without that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He kept getting sick they took a boat down to King's Landing.
Yeah.
He kept getting sick. So to not have it as a throw up catcher, he shaved his beard and she was like, who are you?
Yeah, that's right. It was like chunky soup in his beard or something.
So it's just, in that kind of a lifestyle, growing a beard is not a casual thing, part of your identity.
Yeah.
Yeah. The other thing about this scene is just, of course, because we got last season that scene of Pycelle with the horror, it wasn't quite as big a shock because in the book, We didn't have any clue of that. So when they go to get him and there's a whore in his room, it's just like, well, isn't that interesting given that maesters are supposed to be celibate?
Right.
But, Maester, we kind of...
You are not.
I did like, Tyrion tipping the whore for the trouble.
Yeah. Oh, yes. And giving a little extra.
Yeah. It's more about the care and attention that Tyrion gives to whores.
Yeah.
He really does, he does. He loves whores. Well, in the books, he's only ever with whores, and he talks about how he's more comfortable with them. But in the last episode, he gets really mad when they killed the baby's, the baby and everything because, you don't mess with whores around Tyrion. So you see that he is very generous, and he actually... sees them as people, whereas nobody else even paid any mind to the girl in the room.
Mm-hmm.
So.
PG's note, they say take him to the black cells. He has a note, the keep, the red keep has four levels, the third of which is black, and of course this is where Ned was held.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Little background. Then we have Tyrion with Varys, and as Christiana said, Varys just finds it kind of funny.
Yeah. Well, and I love that scene, although, I mean, the whole Varys's riddle, just by necessity, they kind of have to abbreviate it a little bit in the show, and I don't really mind that, but I like the slightly more extended version that's in the books. But Varys is one of my favorite characters of the whole series, and I love that whole relationship where Tyrion sort of finds himself kind of liking him, and you know, he's drinking wine with him as opposed to like how his interactions with Littlefinger, for example. But at this, and there's that whole, but there's that whole thing of, you know, our mutual friend is doing well, and it's mm-hmm. just like, you're acting really nice, but I need to remember that that does not necessarily mean you are on my side. And mm-hmm. and it would be, and the thing with Varys is that it would be very, very easy because of the way he acts to sort of stop taking him seriously, mm-hmm. but that could be to your own detriment yeah. to yeah. To ever forget to take him seriously.
I've decided I don't like riddles.
Yeah,
and the riddle's great because it just follows Tyrion.
Yeah, well, and yeah, and just this whole idea of, you know, well, if it's the sellsword, the guy with the sword that has the power, who was it that executed Ned Stark?
Yep.
You know, are we going to say, oh, well, there's no one to blame except the guy who's standing there with the sword?
Yeah.
Is that right? You know? But then yeah. also just this idea that power being a trick is not reassuring to Tyrion, because it just means that it could all just disintegrate.
Yes.
And he knows that, because what did he just do to Pycelle?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. The power's a curious thing speech bugged me a little bit. I think it's unjustified, though, because it was part of the preview and it was part of all of the ads coming into season two. So yeah. when he starts to say it, it felt like a separate overdub, ominous mm-hmm. voice, a little too slick. But
I could see that, yeah.
Power resides where men believe it resides. It's a trick, a shadow on the wall. And a very small man can cast a very large shadow.
Let me go to Arya and Yoren.
Yoren, another character that they I feel like I got a much better sense of in the show than in the book. Yeah,
definitely.
Oh, I did want to back up real quick. As you were talking about really liking Varys, and I would really like to see another banter scene with him and Baelish.
Yeah.
I like their, you know, mutual respect and admiration and their little quips together.
Do you stay up nights thinking about my gash?
I'd love to see another one of those. But so yeah, with Arya and Yoren, and yeah, I was very sad at that, because I was really digging Yoren, and he went off on a great note, you know, the story. You know, the name is a little prayer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And he definitely went out strong.
Yeah, that was amazing.
How great a final line. I always hated crossbows after he's been shot. It takes so long to load. Ha! I mean, but yeah, at the same time. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead, honey.
I was just going to say, at the same time, it is also what Arya can't help but take away from that is it doesn't matter how badass he was. There was just too many of them, and they still help him.
I loved his, hey, there's men out there who want to fuck your corpses.
I know. What a rally cry.
You guys are saying every line I wrote down.
I'm running right now, and it's just a TV show. Who do I got to fight off?
PG says, shout out to Francis McGee, who plays Yoren. Just great acting.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
He's outstanding. And I love Yoren more in the series than I loved him in the books. And absolutely. By this point, I really do love Yoren in the books, because I realize how much he's looking out for Arya and mm-hmm. all the boys. But seeing this scene, oh, it's so well done. And they've combined, like, what, two or three scenes into one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they were able to convey so much more, I think, by doing that than if they had dragged it out.
Mm-hmm. Well, and they've played the trick a couple of times now where you have a character that's been in the background, and then suddenly we zoom in and we learn some really poignant story that really makes us care about them, and then in the next scene they die. And it's, I mean, they've done it several times, and I can't really fault them for it because there are so many fascinating characters. How the hell can you keep them straight to remember that you care about this person if they die three scenes later? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Or three episodes later. So I'm getting a little tired of that, but I totally understand why they do it, and I will suffer through it.
There is that line that people, I don't like saying this to people who are new to the series or new to the books or anything like that, because I feel like it sets them up for stuff. But when people tell you, oh yeah, George R. R. Martin, it's great, don't get attached to anyone. And it's totally true, because the moment you like somebody is when something bad is going to happen to them.
Well, see, I feel like, I think this is exactly why you sort of hesitated to say it, is that I feel like the fact that anyone could die is not a reason to not get attached, because that's half of what of the enjoyment you get from the story is, is that it's, you are attached and you actually care about people. And so that makes it painful when someone that you liked gets killed, but that's part of what you're reading the books for, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if Which it doesn't make I you feel anything, people. What's the point? Yeah.
Well, and to I be never honest, tell people don't get attached. I just hear that all the time, and I'm like, why did somebody tell you that?
Well, and to be honest, you learn that in the first book. They cut off Ned Stark's fucking head.
Spoiler alert.
Everything in book one is pointed at making us love the Starks, dislike the families against them. They're the protagonist. He's the protagonist. He's dead? You know what I mean? That's if you went on and read 2, 3, 4, 5 after that, you really kind of knew what you were in for.
Mm-hmm.
In my opinion. My opinion.
I agree with your opinion.
Why, thank you.
PG's
and
notes.
And how smart was Arya? Oh, sorry.
Oh, yeah.
No, let Nutty talk before PG's comments, because Nutty is here.
Mm-hmm.
I was just saying, how smart is Arya? You want Gendry? Brilliant. You already got him. He loved that. I mean, at least now Lami Greenhand's died for something.
Yeah.
Did you guys notice? He took an arrow to the knee.
Oh. He did!
I was going to be brother of the Night's Watch, but then I took an arrow to the knee.
I didn't catch that at all.
You guys know what I'm talking about, right?
I don't.
I do.
The Skyrim meme. there's a whole meme with Skyrim, because in that game, one of the random lines that some of, you know, random townspeople you'll run into, they have all these lines, but one of them that ends up kind of just getting said a lot is, oh, I used to be an adventurer like you, but then I took an arrow to the knee. Then it just became this whole meme of arrow to the knee.
Nice.
And then I was thinking, Lami, he took an arrow to the knee.
He did.
You're going to have to carry me.
Yeah.
Okay.
What can we learn from his example, kids?
Yeah.
You know?
On PG's comments, and I don't know the pronunciation, Amory Lorch,
mm-hmm.
one of Tywin's henchmen. He was, along with Gregor Clegane, responsible for the killing of the Targaryen children at Tywin's orders.
And wasn't he also the guy who came to get her and killed Syrio? Or was that Trant?
I think that was Trant. Sure.
Spacing. I don't know. But,
yeah, because I think they call the group, Gregor Clegane's group, the Bloody Murmurs, right? Is that them?
Bloody Mummers.
Mummers, yeah. And they were actually off pillaging, and Ned had sent his men to go after him, which is why Ned didn't have so many men in the city.
That's right. Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
Well, and so, you know, and I think in the book, the when you know, Arya and Euron and that whole group were attacked, it was actually not people looking for Gendry. It was them looking for Beric Dondarrion and the brave companions.
Yes.
But, you know, they figured, hey, look, here's some people we can take as hostages. That seems like a good idea.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, Pidgey went on, poor Lami, too much attitude for Lorch's man. And as far as the ending, who's going to believe that Lami was a blacksmith's apprentice? Which Patman agreed with.
It's dark.
Well, that's the thing is that it's not the sort of lie that would hold up for very long. But if it holds up long enough for Lorch to stop threatening to take eyeballs, then that's a net bonus.
Absolutely.
Well, it's not like they took the dead with them. And, I mean, the fact that he was blonde hair, blue eyes, might have been a dead giveaway if they wanted to confirm the identity. But, you know, they're like, oh, yeah, there's the helmet. All right, let's go. We did it. I mean, they're not taking the body with them.
Although I think, really, if that's really what their whole mission was, they would.
I don't know. Did they take the dead baby?
I was going to say, do they take the helm?
Well, so that's the thing. That's what makes it a little confusing when they imply that that's what the group is there to do.
Yeah.
Because the other aspect of that is that they're not going back to... They had at least one gold cloak there with them as part of the group.
Yeah.
But they're not going back to...
Well...
They're not going back to King's Landing.
And I guess the other question is, what did they do with the corpses of the other bastards? We saw them get killed. Did we see them get carried back to...
Well, no, but I mean, it's one thing to say it happened in the city with a whole platoon of gold cloaks. It's another thing to say, hey, we're going to send you guys off on a mission and you're going to be gone a couple weeks and then you'll come back and say we did it. And we say, how do we know you guys didn't just dick around in the Riverlands for a while?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
By the way, I think the one that killed, this is totally geeky and nerdy and I shouldn't even bring it up, but I think the one that killed Lami was Polliver because he's the one that stole Needle.
Oh, I think you're right. Mm. I think you're right.
Nice catch. Yes. And Patman's commented, they've compressed Arya's storyline somewhat, which is probably a good thing for TV. I somewhat prefer how the book presented this particular conflict. With the book version, Sir Amory Lorch besieging the Night's Watch recruits simply because he was a huge douchebag.
Yes,
he is that.
Certain things from the book played out well on screen, like Arya giving the Three Stooges the axe to escape and the sad death of Lami Greenhands.
Yes.
Now, Pat actually did he wrote a dramatic scene depicting on why, you know, they should have immediately realized that he wasn't a blacksmith's apprentice, but we're way over time, so I'm not going to read through it.
Okay, well then I'm going to read the comment that Nobilis gave me. He was one of the people that replied to me when I said that we're sitting down to record. He said, they seem to be ending every episode with Arya. So that's his little nugget of feedback for this episode.
Interesting.
Except last episode. Except last episode.
Right.
With John.
Yeah.
With John, that's right. John was the last one.
Yeah. But not a bad thing, you know.
Yeah.
Any scenes of Arya is a good scene.
I know. It makes me, it's like seeing her, it's like, okay, she's all right. I know what she's going through and I know what she's going to go through, but she's okay. Mm-hmm. I can put my eyes on her.
Yeah.
But I think that what we're getting from next time is that they're going straight to Harrenhal from here, which means that they're cutting out about 4 Arya chapters worth of stuff that happened in between those things. But that's okay, because I actually feel like there's no reason that they couldn't incorporate a couple of the beats from those chapters into what happens at Harrenhal. And
they've already incorporated some of it, like, for instance, Gendry finding out that she's a girl.
Right. Well, and Lami's death, for that matter, didn't happen at that point, you know. So, so I think they're compressing that in a very smart way.
Yep, I agree. So,
Vivid mentioned Nobilis making a comment. He's also left a couple of voicemails, so we wanted to put in a reminder here. We're not going to play any voicemails in this episode, but we will on next episode. So if any listeners want to call in, if you have something to say about the Game of Thrones, about this podcast, or the rest of the franchise, the outro has all of the vital information to do that.
Yes.
Ratings. So this episode, as I said, I wasn't totally overwhelmed with this episode, so I give it 4 out of 10 Tyrion deceptions.
You stole mine!
Oh, I'm sorry.
Zing! Now you know how I felt last week.
So wait, what was your rating again?
4 out of 10.
So,
wow,
really, that's 12 out of... Because they're triple deceptions.
Wait a minute, so you only liked it 4 out of 10?
Uh-huh.
Wow.
I mean, on the Game of Thrones scale.
Right. No, it's just interesting. No, that's... Like I said at the beginning, it's fascinating to me how your take on this episode is so different from mm-hmm. mine, because honestly, I would give it like a 13 out of 10.
Wow.
I don't know, pirate flags. I'm looking at a pirate flag, so I'm going to say 13 out of 10 pirate flags. I loved this. It introduced Brienne. It introduced Marjorie, two strong females, not without flaws or frailties, but strong women. We don't know much about them yet. The scene with Jorin was so beautifully horrific. I mean, it was just, there was so much that I loved in this episode. They condensed a lot into this episode that I wasn't ready to see yet from the books. So that was surprising. And I think that's one of the things I liked about it. Stuff happened a lot sooner than I was expecting. So
well, maybe give it a 5 out of 10. How about you, Christiana?
But again, you're a non-reader, so it makes sense for there to be a difference.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to say 6 out of 7 feet worth of Brienne.
Nice.
Which foot are we leaving off here now? The right, the left?
And I would give it 9 out of 10 arrows to the knee.
Good comeback.
Good save, Nettie.
Yeah. I can thank Christiana for bringing up the arrow to the knee.
So I guess Patman wouldn't have given us a rating, though, would he?
No. And PG did not give a rating either.
Yeah, I thought you said that already. Yeah.
There was also no Danny this week, by the way.
Nope.
Well, that kind of made sense because they covered, I think it's going to be kind of, I mean, there's just too many. They're going to have to be bouncing
back. They did it last year, too. I mean, they go back and forth of who they cover, but you know. Yeah. And next episode is called Garden of Bones.
Mm.
Garden of Bones.
So, Viv, did you have our prognostications?
I have not got our... I have half of our prognostications.
Did we have any answers aside from us?
I never got the death count, so I didn't actually go through. I would have... I didn't have the count, which is like my first step in seeing who, you know what I mean, what the boundaries were. I forgot to make the spreadsheet. I suck. I don't know. Because I got the surveys, but I didn't. I guess I was waiting for my usual trigger of having the counts to trigger me to do that part.
Well, perhaps next episode it'll be a twofer. And, well... As I said, we've gone a bit long, so we'll have to come up with the next counts, which will be posted to the website as quickly as possible. If you head over to specficmedia.com/BTW, you can click on the survey link, and you'll see the new survey up there if you want to get your guesses in. And next episode, we will find out who the winner of this one was, and we'll find out who the winner of the next one is.
And we had quite a lot of comments on the blog, but because we're running over, I don't think we should cover them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot. And thank you very much, everyone that did comment on the blog. I reserved my responses because I thought we'd cover it, but I may go back in and respond to you personally on the blog.
Yes.
Well, cool. Yeah.
It's great that we're getting lots of comments there.
Yeah. Love it. Keep it coming, and we'll get to those in the future. So, all right.
All right.
So that's going to wrap for this episode. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Thank you guys for taking the time to talk about it again. And we
anytime.
Will talk to you next time.
Yay.
Bye.
Bye. We miss you, Patrick. Bye.
If you'd like to send feedback to Beyond the Wall, you can email us at btw@specficmedia.com. That's btw@specficmedia.com. Or you could send us a voicemail at 704-315-5884. Or you can comment on the web. Go to specficmedia.com, and there you'll find a shiny little button to click on that'll take you right to our page. This podcast is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike 3.0 Unported license. Feel free to share and remix. Just give us credit and don't charge money for it.